The risky mortgage is making a comeback.
There's really a limited number of borrowers who are cream of the crop. And at a certain point, you have to start going down the ladder a little bit.
And President Trump is weighing ways to boost the economy.
Payroll tax is something that we think about, and a lot of people would like to see that.
Plus, the truth about faster internet. It's not worth it. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a look at the return of the risky mortgage, yes, the same kind that were doled out in the run-up to the financial crisis, here's what you missed. President Trump said he's considering ways to boost the U.S. economy. Options include a possible reduction in capital gains taxes or a reduction in the payroll tax. However, even as he confirmed that his administration was looking at various proposals, President Trump downplayed the risk of a possible slowdown.
We're very far from a recession. In fact, if the Fed would do its job, I think it would have a tremendous spurt of growth.
Separately, the White House said it had canceled the president's planned trip to Denmark. The reason? On Twitter, the president cited the Danish prime minister's refusal to discuss the purchase of Greenland. On Sunday, Mette Frederiksen said it was, quote, an absurd discussion. And that was the scene outside Italy's Senate yesterday. Supporters of the Five Star Movement had gathered to jeer the Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte. He resigned yesterday. His decision to step down came after Matteo Salvini withdrew his support. We write that the collapse of Italy's government triggered a power struggle between the country's right-wing nationalists and rival parties. It also deepened Europe's political upheaval as it struggles with immigration and slowing economic growth. Now, our main story this morning. Risky mortgages are making a comeback. More than a decade after home loans led to the financial crisis, we report that the strict lending requirements put in place in its aftermath are starting to erode. To find out more, Charlie Turner has been speaking with Ben Eisen.
Why has it become easier all over again for people with low credit scores or high debt levels or questionable proof of employment to get these loans?
Well, it's been very difficult to get these loans for a long period after the financial crisis. You saw standards really tighten up due to the financial crisis. And then now, about a decade later, we're finally starting to see some loosening. And that's really coming as a new crop of lenders come in and look to make these types of loans. And as the lending industry generally looks for new business, it's been a long time since the financial crisis. And there's really a limited number of borrowers who are cream of the crop. And at a certain point, you have to start going down the ladder a little bit.
Now, you say that lenders are rebranding these loans. They're not referred to nowadays the way they used to be referred to. How are they rebranding loans?
Well, if you go into the office of a loan officer these days, you'll probably hear this type of loan called non-qualified or non-QM. And that's a new term that came after the financial crisis. It refers to a loan that isn't presumed to have met the standards set by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau after the financial crisis. But really, these do look a lot like the Alt-A loans prior to the financial crisis. And these were the types of loans you may recall. They were later called liar loans because borrowers lied about their income and their assets. And now what you have is, again, these types of loans that depend on different means of verifying a borrower's income. So you have bank statements and other forms of proof of a borrower's income.
And these bank statements, from what I understand, don't go back that far?
Well, it depends. When they started introducing these loans, they required years worth of bank statements. And now they kind of gradually require fewer and fewer months of bank statements. So it's, some would call it a slippery slope. Others would say that it's kind of just opening up the mortgage market a bit more for folks.
As far as who's making the loans, it's not the major banks these days. You mentioned a new crop of lenders, you know, that have sprung up. They're the ones making most of these loans.
Right. It's non-bank firms, and they're sort of specialty lenders. A lot of them are specialized in these types of loans. Others are just non-bank lenders that have introduced these products. But this is of an ilk that's sort of separate from banks.
These subprime loans are being packaged into securities like mortgage bonds.
Yeah, that's pretty much how the mortgage market works. A good deal of mortgages are packaged into mortgage-backed securities. But what's happening here is actually pretty interesting because what you're seeing is the firms that are doing this packaging into mortgage bonds are the big banks. So the big banks aren't really extending the loans, but they have in recent months actually been happy to buy up the loans and then package them into securities and sell them to investors. So that's sort of one way that that big banks like JP Morgan and Citigroup are kind of getting into the fray of this market.
Are lenders this time around doing anything to mitigate the risk that home buyers might default? Are they putting in safeguards as far as who they lend to or how they lend to them?
Yeah, I think if you ask most lenders, they would say these are not as risky as they were prior to the financial crisis. And I think most experts would agree that we are not at the same level as we were prior to the financial crisis. This is really sort of a little bit of slippage in standards. And one of the ways that folks try to alleviate concerns about risks is that they try to prevent what's called risk layering. They may allow you to have one risk, like a low credit score, but you have to compensate with it by having other strong financial characteristics. So if you have a low credit score, you might have to have a lot of equity in your home. You might have to put down a big down payment. You might have to do something else that shows that you are a good borrower. But that said, this is a new market, and there's a lot of growth here, and it really depends on who you go to for a loan in terms of how much risk there is.
You can find Ben's article up on WSJ.com. On to markets. U.S. companies are buying back their own shares at the slowest pace in 18 months. Some say that could be a sign of more volatility ahead. Steve Russolillo explains.
The buyback boom is showing signs that it's slowing down. And what this means is that companies look like they're repurchasing fewer of their own shares than they have in recent years. Companies are really starting to tighten their wallets here. There's a lot of things that are concerning going on in the world right now. You think of the U.S.-China trade dispute. The corporate earnings picture doesn't look so great. Global economic growth is slowing down. The Fed has cut rates once, and it could do more cuts in the future, but we're not quite sure. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the world right now. And this is potentially a worrying sign for the stock market because demand from corporations for their own stock has been, you know, one of the key pillars of the stock market's performance really since the financial crisis. And so if that pillar of support starts to go away a little bit, that could be a sign of more volatility ahead. And it potentially could be a sign that this bull market could be on its last legs.
And now the Sked. Here's what else we're paying attention to today. The Federal Reserve will release minutes from its July meeting later today. That's the meeting when the Fed decided to cut interest rates by a quarter of a percentage point to a range of between 2 and 2.25%. Nick Timmerosch has more on what to look for.
One of the big questions is going to be how much support there was for that rate cut at the July meeting. Before the meeting, nearly half of the 12 Reserve Bank presidents seemed skeptical of the need to cut interest rates. Not all of the Reserve Bank presidents have a vote on the Federal Open Market Committee, but they participate in the meetings. And so the minutes will give a better flavor about how much support there was for this rate cut, and then how different people saw the arguments, the various arguments for cutting interest rates in July. The minutes will provide a little bit more color on why two of the Fed officials who dissented from the vote to cut rates did so. Those officials have said that they were worried about easing policy when the economy was relatively good because that could fuel financial bubbles or other instability. So we may get a little bit more color on that as well.
But Nick cautions that a lot has changed since that July meeting.
So the minutes are released with a three-week lag, and sometimes not a whole lot happens after the meeting, so that information is still relatively fresh. In this case, there have been a lot of developments on trade, and also in markets, long-term treasury yields have really moved a lot lower since the meeting. So we'll be getting the Fed's reaction to the outlook at a particular point in time, but it's not clear that it'll be all that helpful to help make sense as to the Fed's next few moves.
The minutes will be released at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Finally, we're spending more than ever for super fast internet speeds. The assumption, of course, is that faster is better. But we conducted an investigation and found that for most people, that's just not the case. Shalini Ramachandran explains.
There are 50 journal reporters who were part of a panel where we put a small computer and a high-powered Wi-Fi router in everybody's home. And we worked with researchers at the University of Chicago and Princeton who created a software that would basically study the speeds of big, heavy bandwidth streaming applications like Netflix, that kind of thing.
And what did they find?
The study found that beyond speeds of about 100 megabits per second, you're not going to see much benefit to getting faster speeds as it pertains to streaming video.
To hear more about our investigation into broadband speeds, you can listen to our afternoon podcast, The Journal. It's our podcast about money, business, and power. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.